Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my true crime angels, to Trisha's True Crime Radio. I do appreciate you joining me today. We're going to have a great show. Oscar Pistorius. Man, that guy kind of fell apart on the stand Friday, and we have an amazing guest to tell us all about that. That's coming up in just a moment, but first, Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by the Doris Day Animal Foundation. This is a national nonprofit public charity. It was founded in 1978 by actress Doris Day, who, by the way, just turned 90, and it basically has a very straightforward and short mission statement: to help animals and the people who love them. And Doris Day, back in the 70s, she was going around rescuing animals before it was the cool thing to do. In fact, people started dropping off animals at her house in the middle of the night by her gate, you know, tying them on her gate. She'd get up in the morning, there they'd be. So she decided this nonprofit, to form this nonprofit with the sole purpose to make sure these animals have a good home. You can check out the website. It's www.dorisdayanimalfoundation.org. Okay, let's do this legal goo thing. Are you ready to be gooed? Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuth.com LLC and formsforjustice.org. I want to give you a Michael update, a Michael James update. Michael, my co-host, as many of you know, suffered a devastating fire. He lost three out of his four beloved animal pets, beloved pets, they were his kids, basically. And he lost everything, literally. I mean, it's just ashes where his house and his garage used to stand. So he's getting through the day, but it's still tough. He told me the other day his heart was shredded. So I've posted a couple of links in the chat room to his Facebook page and to a thread on Web Sleuth. If you want to stop by and just give him a little uplifting post or something, I'm sure he'd greatly appreciate it. This is such a life-changing, horrific event, and any help, any support he can get, I know he does, like I said, greatly appreciate it. Okay, our guest tonight is an amazing woman. That's the only way I can describe her. Allison Treasel. She's the former president of the L.A. County Criminal Courts Bar Association. She is a criminal defense attorney herself, in addition to being one of L.A.'s top criminal attorneys. Allison is the co-founder and CEO of the Pasadena Recovery Center. This is a 98-bed drug and alcohol treatment center, which she co-founded in 2000 with her father, the renowned psychiatrist Dr. Lee Bloom. Allison, are you ready for this? Allison also created the app for Wild About Trial. You know, we're wild about trial? Yeah, Allison is behind that. She is so amazingly brilliant. In 2006, Allison was honored as Woman of the Year for Los Angeles County, and the same year received a commendation for outstanding community service from both the Lieutenant Governor and City Attorney. Allison has also appeared on every talk show known to humankind. In addition to her professional accomplishments, Allison is also a very devoted wife and mother, and when she has spare time, she goes to Somalia to deworm orphans. I think that's what she does anyway. Allison, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me. I don't know who you're talking about with all of that, but sounded good.
Hey, I love introducing you because it's just like it just gets, there's more and more and more and more, and it's like, wow, this is an amazing woman, and you are. Now, you have been living and eating and breathing the Oscar Pistorius trial. It's going on in South Africa, and in case you have been living in a cave with the Taliban, Oscar Pistorius is accused of killing his girlfriend. He doesn't deny he shot her, but he says he thought there was an intruder in the bathroom in the middle of the night who had locked the door behind him, and so he shot through the door. Now, neighbors say there was screaming and yelling and arguing going on beforehand. Oscar Pistorius is kind of being painted as a little bit of an egomaniac who's a control freak, and he loves guns, and he is the Blade Runner. He has the two blades on each leg. And he was a darling of the 2012 Olympics in London. And he is on trial now in South Africa, and he is on the stand, and the prosecution is drilling him on the stand. But let's talk a little bit, Allison, about why the prosecution, I think, has quite a bit of room to work with, because the bail hearing in South Africa, they do something very unusual. Tell us about that.
So at the bail hearing, the defendant has to lay out their case. They have to explain to the judge what happened that night in some detail, which is very unusual. It's completely unlike our system, where the only questions you look at are whether this person is going to flee and whether they are a danger to the community, and you never really get into the meat of what happened that night. And So here, he's laid out his story or his version of events as to what happened, and now his testimony has to align with that perfectly, or as we've seen over the last couple of days, he can get himself into some real hot water.
And so that's why the prosecution is just chomping at the bit here. They call him, let me get his nicknames here because he has several of them. Hold on. They call him, where did it go? They call him the Pit Bull and the, what else? There's another name that he has. The Pit Bull.
Bulldog, Pit Bull.
Bulldog, that's it. Yeah.
Right, and he's really gone after him, you know, in such scathing fashion for days now, leading Oscar Pistorius at many times tears, and also just being physically exhausted. And in fact, on Friday, the judge questioned whether Oscar Pistorius could continue for the day. She basically said, "Are you okay? I need all of you here. And if you're too mentally exhausted to go forward where you're making these mistakes, I need to know."
Can I ask you just to talk up just a little bit? Maybe I don't know if your mouth is right on the phone speaker, but if you could talk up just a little bit for me, okay?
Sure.
I'm old. My hearing is gone.
Is it better?
So that's much better. Thank you. Okay, so let's talk about the testimony on Friday. It literally, like you said, left Oscar Pistorius exhausted to the point where the judge said, I can't have half of you here. You're fading away. What happened? What was the exchange? What brought this about?
The prosecutor repeatedly called Oscar Pistorius a liar. He didn't just attack his story. He said, "Sir, you're a liar, and nobody believes you. And how in the world could you not wake up the person next to you or check and see if she was there? And your story doesn't make sense." And he repeatedly went over these things, and he nailed him down on a ton of inconsistencies. You know, most specifically, it is that her laying there next to him, how in the world could he not know that she wasn't in the bed? Didn't make
right.
sense.
And so that's what really got to him. How did he explain it? Did he just say, "I just didn't? I was an idiot. I didn't see it. Didn't see her"?
The overreaching theme of the day was everything happened so quickly for him. That everything happened so quickly, he did the best that he could under the circumstances. He was in fear for his life. Trying to protect himself, he was trying to protect Reva, and therefore he just fired. And he believed that there was an intruder who had made their way into the bathroom and was coming out of that bathroom, and so there was an imminent fear of danger. The problem, of course, with his story is that these inconsistencies, as you talked about, the screaming from the neighbors that they were certain was a female voice. Also, when he didn't wake her up, how he went outside and pulled in these fans, yet there was no place in the outlet to put the fan in. And so he said when the police got there, that fan was not plugged in and there was nowhere to put the fan. Those are little details, but they add up. They add up when the judge is evaluating this case to determine whether or not Oscar Pistorius is telling the truth about this intruder.
Allison, could you repeat that about the fan again? I was in the chat room checking on some questions, and that was one of my questions to you, with the significance of the fan. It was out on the deck, and then what happened?
So he claimed that this is another thing that he brought up at the bail hearing, which is that he brought those fans in from out on the balcony. The problem is that there was no place in the outlet for him to have plugged in the fan. The fan was unplugged next to the bed, and the prosecutor said to him, "Sir, look at this picture. There's nowhere in the outlet to plug that fan in. Therefore, you're lying about that part of your version of events."
And what he's saying is he got up to bring it in. He brought it in, plugged it in, and then hurt the intruder is what he's saying, right?
Correct.
And since he didn't plug it in, that's bad. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, and then there's this other major, major issue that the way that, that Reba is shot indicates that she's standing. So they were, in fact, the prosecution is arguing that there was this fight. She's on one end of the door with the door locked. She has his cell phone in the bathroom, and they're fighting, and he shoots through the door as she's standing facing the door.
Mm-hmm. And so that's
which, of course, yeah, correct. And and the prosecution's best argument there is, why would she be standing facing the door? Why wouldn't she yell out to you and you stop? Hey, Oscar, it's me, Reba. Don't shoot.
Exactly. Why is she standing right there? Almost like if you remove the door, they'd be standing face to face, kind of.
That's true.
And yeah, and so it's just not looking good for Oscar Pistorius. Now, we have some questions from our chat room. We're talking with Allison Treasel. She is a criminal defense attorney, an incredible woman in Los Angeles County and every part of the world she goes to. She's incredible, no matter where she's at. And we're talking about the Oscar Pistorius case, and one of the questions is the judge. Do you think the judge will be affected by the theatrics or dramatics of Oscar Pistorius? It does seem... I mean, maybe he's acting, but maybe he isn't. I don't know. Do you think the judge will be affected by his behavior? It's so dramatic and, you know, just sad, actually.
You know, I just don't. I think that this is a very sophisticated professional. She has handled cases like this in the past where it doesn't appear that she's had much sympathy. She sentenced someone in a similar situation where there's a domestic dispute that ends in a murder to over 200 years. She's very, she is thorough. She is listening to all of the evidence. I believe that she's going to be able to weed out what is relevant, what isn't, what is theatrics, what isn't. Remember, this is being played to the world, but unlike a system where there's a jury, this is mm-hmm. one judge. She has two assessors helping her, but where a jury may be awestruck or starstruck because of his celebrity status. And remember, in South Africa, Oscar Pistorius is as big as they get. Oscar Pistorius
yes.
is their hero. He is this man who, as you discussed, runs on these blades. He has no legs from the knee down. And mm-hmm. he is really this incredible success story where he grew up being bullied and tormented, and his mother said, you can do anything, you can be anything, and then there he was competing in the Olympics. So for them, he is their national hero. He's absolutely loved and adored. So if you'd impanel a jury, you've got to believe that a few of them would be so starstruck that they would dismiss some of this prosecution evidence. However, I don't think that's going to happen with this judge.
Were his prosthetic legs on or off?
Both sides now agree that at the time of the shooting, based on the trajectory of the bullets, his prosthetics were off.
Off, O-F-F, okay. Because
correct.
Of the way he was obviously shorter to the ground and the way the bullets went in, it was that's the way they were able to tell that they were off. Is he
that is
able,
correct.
And I don't mean to be, I'm not trying to be cruel here, but is he able to walk? I mean, he doesn't have any feet. Is he able just to stand? And he probably can't go very fast, I would imagine.
And that actually helps the defense, because the defense's argument is that he has very unsteady gait, and his former girlfriend, who 90% of her testimony was very damning, did say that he has trouble walking on his stumps and that he is unbalanced, and it is much more difficult for him to do things on his stumps.
Let's talk about his ex-girlfriend. What was so damning? Was it about his personality, being controlling, freaking out, anger? What did she say?
Right, his temper, mm-hmm. that he would get very angry at her, could be verbally abusive, did not say anything really about being physically abusive, but she also testified to an incident where there was he negligently discharged a firearm out of a vehicle, and on the stand he has denied that. There were two prior incidents that the prosecution brought up where he was involved in discharge of a firearm, Mm-hmm. One was at a restaurant, one was in this car, and she said that Oscar got angry. The police had pulled them over, and he got angry, and he shot off his weapon.
God, he's just got his ego is out of control. A lot of people in the chat room, Allison, are talking about, is he a narcissist? You said in the beginning, his mother told him, you can be anything, you can do anything, and that's a great thing to tell your child, especially if they're handicapped. And then they go on to do it. You kind of wonder if that creates a bit of a monster. He is a hero. He is a hero based on the fact he was able to survive, let alone go into the Olympics wearing these metal feet, based metal legs, basically half of from below his knees down. Do you think he is a narcissist? It just sounds like he's one of those men that are just control freaks, and they own the woman no matter what.
Well, we've brought this up before. I mean, there may be two sides of Oscar Pistorius, and one is that he is hot-tempered. And he may very well be a narcissist. And one of the things that certainly happens a lot in Los Angeles and probably elsewhere in the United States is that when people get fame and accolades and they think that they are untouchable, they basically do whatever they want to do, and no one ever sets limits and tells them no.
Right.
So you have that happening here. He is literally their national hero there. So loved and adored by all, and apparently has a very, very bad jealous streak in him. And these text messages that I want to briefly go over, so there were several text messages that the prosecution brought up that appeared to be quite alarming. And one was where Reba is saying to him, I'm scared of you at times. Mm-hmm. I'm scared of what you'll do and how you are. I'm scared of you. Interesting, by the way, that throughout all these text message exchanges, and we know that we are a society where we text, you know, all the
yeah.
time, never once did they ever say, I love you, to each other.
That's so
a very
weird.
Interesting, yeah, it was a very interesting point that in this relationship where she would stay at his home and they were very, very close, never did they exchange love you to each other.
We're talking with Allison Treasel. She is the former president of the L.A. County Criminal Courts Bar Association and a very well-known and very successful criminal defense attorney in Los Angeles. We're talking about the Oscar Pistorius trial. And Allison, we talked about this before, too. The fact that he didn't say he loved her after they're in, like you just said, close quarters or basically living together, I find that very odd. But then I've talked to guys who say, well, that's, I don't find that odd at all. I do. Did everybody else, or are we just the weird ones?
Right. I mean, a lot of it, we have a young male associate in our office, and he said, look, they weren't dating that long. That's reserved for people who are in a long-term relationship. It's not strange at all. So, I mean, in standing alone, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all. But you just put it in as a piece of this puzzle, and when you put everything together, it's story that there was an intruder that came through his bathroom and would be hiding in the bathroom that simply doesn't make sense. Then
it
you put the ballistics together, you put the screening together, and it looks as if they had a nasty fight. They were going back and forth. She had his cell phone in the bathroom. He probably wanted it back. They were yelling about it, and he fired. And I think the prosecution is going to have a very hard time proving premeditation, but I do think that they have a very good shot of getting a conviction for a culpable homicide there, which still means that Oscar Pistorius will be spending, if the prosecution proves its case, many years in prison.
And the prosecutor is Jerry Nell, and it's interesting, again, how they do things differently in South Africa. They call the judge my lady, which is just so old-fashioned and reminds me of 18th century London or something. But they also allow the prosecutor to tell his personal opinion, which they don't hear in the U.S. Tell us how that has affected the cross-examination of Oscar.
Well, in the United States, most questions that Nell asked would be objected to. They are inflammatory. They are biased. They are leading. They are, they're just scathing, irrelevant questions.
Mm-hmm.
But there, he's really allowed to say to him, look, you're lying. It doesn't make sense. I know that you're lying. And you know, essentially, I think that you did this intentionally. He also, Oscar Pistorius was allowed to give a speech at the beginning of his testimony where he acknowledges and apologizes to Reva's family. And Nell tore that apart on cross-examination and said, you know, it's really a self-serving statement, and why didn't you do this in private and many, many months ago? Oscar did a very good job by saying, look, I tried to reach out. My, you know, my lawyers had advised me what to do. And in fact, Reva Steenkamp's family did approach the prosecutor, and the prosecutor had to correct himself and said, yes, did try and reach out to us, but we were not ready to hear what he had to say.
And it's interesting, you can go online and find this apology or the speech that he wrote at the beginning of his testimony with it. It is self-serving because it talks about how he, it's all about his feelings and him and what happened to him. And again, it just goes to, since we're playing armchair psychologist here, and this is what we do every Sunday night, it does go to this narcissistic type person who looks at everything through the eyes of how it affects him. He was also, from what I understand, Allison, a very frightened man. He was frightened because obviously, growing up with this disability, he was worried for his safety. He had some real safety issues, which led to getting guns and driving around with guns and always having guns with him for safety's sake. Does he seem a little paranoid, or is it justified
in
his thinking?
Not in this context. I'm going to put my defense attorney hat on for a second. This is a very reasonable argument, and this is something the judge will understand and relate to. South Africa is dangerous, and home invasion robberies are not uncommon there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And people do fear for their safety and their lives all of the time. So when he says, I was concerned when somebody was in my home and we've had people, you know, home invasion style robberies before, that is something that is, and he's saying, and I'm further afraid because I'm in a vulnerable state, because of myself, I'm in a vulnerable state. So that is actually a very strong defense argument and reasonable to make.
Well, that is interesting. I didn't think about that because South Africa, as we know, has been it's very tumultuous for years and years and years, and I can't imagine living there. It would be very scary, I would think. So let's talk about the what ifs here, Allison. What if he is found? If the judge says, you know, I just don't think the prosecution proved their case. What life is left for Oscar Pistorius if he is found not guilty?
Well, we know that he has lost all of his endorsements, right? So
mm-hmm.
he's lost the big ones. He's lost Nike. He's lost, you know, his money is from what I understand, basically gone. His home is for sale if it hasn't been sold to pay for his legal defense. His endorsements are gone. There never will be a question of whether or not he took someone's life because he admits to doing that. And so there will be this black cloud when it comes to advertising and endorsements that probably will never go away, regardless of whether he's found guilty or not. Now, the public in South Africa may absolutely forgive him, and he may be loved again if he's still not loved by all the people.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of competing and everything else, you know, I do not see any way out of him being convicted of something. So he's got several firearms charges. He's got several ammunition charge. Plus, the judge has to believe, in order to acquit him, that this was a complete self-defense argument and it was reasonable. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a hard time seeing how this judge can find him not guilty completely.
I have a very interesting question from the chat room from Mrs. Norris. If Oscar thought it was an intruder in the bathroom, doesn't that still make it murder? How does misidentification of the victim count? In other words, there's somebody in his bathroom. Do you just shoot him? You know, wouldn't it still be murder in some sense?
Well, I mean, it has to, you know, in order for it to be self-defense, it's got to be reasonable. Was it a reasonable, did he reasonably fear for his safety or the safety of others? And then was a response that he fired into that door a reasonable one? And that goes back to what I was saying before, which is you've got to look at the facts here and say, under what set of circumstances will this judge believe that Oscar Pistorius acted reasonably, even coming down to he had been trained in firearms and he had gone through the scenario of when an intruder comes to your home, when are you allowed to shoot? So he knew the difference between when it was reasonable and when it was unreasonable. And the prosecution has done a very, very good job laying out this was not reasonable.
Right. I see exactly what you're saying, and I agree with you on that. Did they try and plea bargain? Is that something they do in South Africa so they can avoid a trial?
We've asked that question and gotten mixed results. It doesn't seem to be that there is what we know as plea bargaining. There doesn't seem to be, and that is a question that still remains unanswered for me as well, because I can't imagine a system where there isn't some form of plea bargaining. Not every case can be taken to trial. Perhaps in a case as serious as this, they don't. But that is a question that I'd love for one of your listeners to answer for us, because we haven't been able to nail that one down.
Well, I'll tell you what, somebody at websleuth.com, I'm sure, will be able to find out and figure it out, because the great thing about websleuth.com, Allison, is we have people from all over the world, and you say, hey, what about this? And boom, somebody's on it and researching it. That's what I love those posters. They're just amazing, and so are the moderators. We're talking with Allison Treasel about the Oscar Pistorius trial going on right now in South Africa. Oscar is accused of shooting his girlfriend through the bathroom door. He claims he thought it was an intruder, and the evidence is not helping his story whatsoever. He was on the stand Friday being cross-examined by the Pitbull prosecutor, and he got so shook up that the judge actually said, I need you, all of you here. In other words, he was fading, I think he was crying, he was just a nervous, absolute nervous wreck on Friday. I'm assuming Oscar's family is in the courtroom. Does he have their full support?
Yes, he does.
He testified
how he has had these reoccurring nightmares. His sister has been staying on his property with him, and he talked about one instance in particular where he called her up and she came in and, you know, stayed with him and laid with him. So, yes, they are quite supportive.
Well, I know his father has been interviewed, but I haven't seen very much of it. And same with Reva's family. They're all there to support, to speak for Reva as well. Now, haven't the two families, haven't they been seen talking?
Yeah, I mean, they have not focused nearly as much on the two families' interaction, or they haven't focused as much on Oscar's family as they have on Reva's family. There was an exchange where they exchanged pleasantries, and I think that both families acknowledge that this is really a tragedy for both of them. It's really a tragedy for both of them, and. Certainly, I know that Oscar's family has reached out and you know, given their condolences to Reva's parents.
Yeah, I mean, both sides, like you said, it's so tragic, because my friends and I always talk, the worst thing in the world is to have a loved one murdered. The second worst thing in the world is to have a loved one be the killer, because you don't know what to do. And I'm sure in your practice, Allison, you have seen this a lot. And you know, what do you do? Do you go over? Does it mean you're not supporting your loved one on trial? I don't think so. I mean, everybody has suffered a loss at some sort, in some way. And I think it's just the decent and the right thing to do. And I'm glad to hear that that's what they're doing. So where did it end up on Friday? How did we leave it in court?
Oscar's still on the stand, and we think it's going to go a couple more days. It starts up again at 3:30 in the morning, you know, Eastern Standard Time, and he's there, and the pit bull's back at him, going over literally second by second as to what happened that night. The next 2 days should be very, very important, because now both sides have had an opportunity to regroup. And what is interesting is, and this is quite different than the American justice system, Oscar Pistorius is not allowed to consult with his counsel while he's on the stand. So
really?
He really is out there, you know, on in a sea by himself, without mm-hmm. without protection. So in our justice system, at breaks, you can consult with your attorney. You can tweak certain things. You can ask, you know, what do you think I should, how should I address these questions? He's not been able to do that. I would bet that they probably spoke over the weekend, and he's had a chance to kind of reflect and go back over what he needs to say. And the prosecution, of course, has, I'm sure, replayed that testimony and is going to go after him even harder tomorrow.
So, you mean on Monday? Oh, no, wait, it's Sunday. I'm sorry. I don't know what day I'm
yep.
in, let alone what century. So, yeah, it is tomorrow. It starts tonight at 3:30 Eastern Time. In case you're up, you can certainly go, oh, let's talk about Wild About Trial. Now, Allison Treasel, you created this app. Tell us all about it. What, I mean, you're our hero for doing that.
Well, so here's the thing. I was a huge fan of Court TV. I've always loved watching trials. When I was in law school, it was O.J. Simpson, and I've been glued to it ever since. And so I wanted to, I have to work, and I have places to go, but I want to keep watching trials. So I came up with the idea of creating an app where we and a website where you could stream these trials live, and you could watch mm-hmm. them on your tablet, on your phone, on your laptop, and just continue to enjoy these great trials. And unfortunately, there really aren't that many places anymore, with Court TV being gone, where you can watch these. So
right.
It was very important for me for fellow trial watchers to have a home where they could go to and they could discuss these trials, watch them, hear, you know, read some great legal commentary. And, I mean, we cover really the hottest and juiciest and most interesting criminal trials, some funny, some really sad. But always at its core for people who love watching these trials and understanding them and acting like the 13th juror. And so Wild About Trial has really been it's always been a passion for me, and I just got to put a name to it.
We are so grateful that you did that, Allison, because everybody here listening and who will be listening later when they download the show, we all are Wild About Trials, so we are so grateful that you did this for us. I want to get back to Oscar Pistorius for just a moment. I have one more question. The pit bull, the prosecutor, will continue to question Oscar until he's done. We don't know when that will be. But then, can Oscar's attorneys get up like they do here in the U.S. and try and do a little damage control with Oscar and do a redirect?
Yes, there will be some, but at the end of the day, this case is still not over, because apparently Oscar's got a bunch more witnesses, mm-hmm. and he's got his own experts that are going to testify, and he's going to have character witnesses, so we expect this trial to last at least through the week and maybe into the next as well, at least.
So is this going to turn out to be a battle of the experts as well? Because I would think the ballistics would be fairly easy to prove and pretty solid. Do you know if it's a ballistic expert that he's going to call?
Well, you know, what we have talked about and what I have gone back and forth with a lot of people is that really the heart of both the prosecution and the defense's case is Oscar Pistorius and his testimony. Mm-hmm. It's the most important. So in certain crimes, where it's a whodunit and everything else, it really is a battle of the experts, and it comes down to forensics. Here, not as much. Yes, the trajectory of the bullets is very important. Yes, the ear witnesses of the screams are super important, and the text messages. But at the end of the day, it does Austin Pistorius' story make sense? Is it reasonable? And does this judge believe him? That's really the question for this case.
And what do you think? I mean, it's hard to project now because the case isn't over. It appears this judge is very, like you said, down to earth, no nonsense. Do you think she'll be able to find him not guilty?
I don't think she will. Also, I do not think that they're going to be able to prove a premeditated murder, but I do think that they'll be able to prove a culpable homicide. I think that she will give him at least 15 years in prison. That is my prediction.
Well, and I believe you absolutely could be right, because that's what I think. So therefore, I believe you. No, I mean, you know, because you've seen it before. And so I think you're right on about that. But still, that will basically ruin his life. What will he be able to do for money after that? Doesn't sound like he had any socked away. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, and that's really the question is, you know, what kind of life is he going to have after a conviction? I don't know. I really don't know.
Well,
but certainly not a good sign when he's putting up his house for sale so that he can pay his attorneys.
Right. And, you know,
also putting up your house, maybe you believe that you're going to be spending some time in prison and you won't need the house.
There you go. And he's doing the right thing by doing that, that's for sure. And also, like you said, he is such a star. He is the star in South Africa that I'm sure there will be people that will pay him to do something, at least in South Africa when he gets out. So
yes.
I just find it all very fascinating just to see how this will all play out. But it's such a tragedy, such a loss, because Reva was such a wonderful young woman and it's just so senseless. That's the thing that's frustrating.
Right.
Allison.
That's
Allison.
What so many people have said.
And that's it. It's just, this is so senseless. It just is awful. Allison, give us your website addresses, whatever ones you would like to provide for us. We want to go to Wild About Trial. Do you have a one for your law practice? Just give them all.
It's Wild About Trial. It's wildabouttrial.com. And my law practice is, you look up my name, Allison Treisel. It's Allison, T-R-I-E-S-S-L, law.com, and you find me. I'm very available, very accessible. And for people who love to discuss these cases, I love finding a fellow trial junkie. I mean, mm-hmm. Nothing better, right? Right, Tricia?
Oh, boy, I'll tell you what. I find a fellow trial junkie, and I'm hooked. They're hooked to me for life. And so that's
me
it,
too.
Allison. You and I are hooked together, and we'll gather up all the other trial junkies so we can keep discussing this trial, okay?
Sounds good.
Hey, Allison Treisel, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking time out on your Sunday night to be with us. You take care, and thanks again.
Well, thank you for having me. This show is really wonderful.
Good. I'm glad. We'll have you on very soon, okay?
Okay. Be well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Allison Treisel, criminal defense attorney. I know I use the word amazing a lot, but that's the only way to describe her. I mean, I'm reading her accomplishments, and I'm thinking, what did I do yesterday? Oh, I watched TV, and I ate a peanut butter and honey sandwich. You know, it just pales in comparison. She really is just a great lady. I want to update you a little bit on Talika Patrick. Talika Patrick, very tragic case. She is the doctor that had delusions, and she went missing. I think it was December 5th, 2013. Talika Patrick was a young woman. She had a residency going in Michigan, but she was actually in California, and she became obsessed with this man named Marvin Sapp. Marvin Sapp was a preacher, and he was also a gospel singer, a Grammy-nominated gospel singer. And she became obsessed with Marvin Sapp, so much so that she moved from California to be closer to him. Also, some videos were from YouTube that she had deleted were recovered by Web Sleuth members, and it looked like she was talking to somebody she loved. And no way to tell, but the assumption is it was Marvin Sapp. Marvin Sapp didn't know her. There is a question whether they met. If they met at all, it was briefly after church one day in a large group. There was nothing that would stick out, I'm sure, in Marvin Sapp's mind about her. She was another, you know, parishioner coming in, and they were chit-chatting. And she had approached his children. It was very frightening for the Sapp family, I'm sure. So they got a restraining order. And I was talking to Julie Mack about this. She is the reporter from the Kalamazoo Gazette. And she told me that people that knew about Talika Patrick's illness said that she knew about it. And there were days that she would just kind of go away and try and get it under control and then, you know, show back up and she's back to normal, obviously because she was working as a psychiatric resident. So you can't have schizophrenia or have the symptoms of schizophrenia and work in the psychiatric industry as a doctor. And that's so tragic because she didn't seek help. She tried to do it herself, and this is what happened. She just one night, I won't go into all the details, but basically just drove her car. She had a flat tire. That's what they found out. She got out, and she ran out into a field. There was a large pond or a small lake, whatever you want to call it. She fell into that. She drowned. The family, actually, they did an autopsy. And then the family hired another person to do a second autopsy. And the private investigators for the family just came out and said that second autopsy also proved that Talika Patrick drowned. And so it's pretty much done. Another tragedy that, again, this is why I'm getting on my high horse, my soapbox, whatever you want to call it, mental illness. We need to take that stigma away. We need to get people into help that they need so they don't have these tragedies anymore. Because she felt like she couldn't be a doctor and have this illness, she hid it. And I don't blame her one bit. It's still a stigma if you have a mental illness. There's still people that say, oh, get over it. Just get up. Get out of bed. Go, you know, you can do it. Not when your brain is not firing correctly. You can't. So anyway, okay, I'm down off my horse and my soapbox and whatever other article I could climb up on. Hey, you know what? Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you today by the Doris Day Foundation. This is a national nonprofit public charity founded in 1978 as Doris Day realized that there were pets all over the place that were wandering. They would be picked up by the pound and killed. It broke her heart. She started the foundation with the very simple task of trying to find homes for all the animals, so there is not one animal that is unloved. I would encourage you to check her site out. It is www.dorisdayanimalfoundation.org. And do remember this, opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuths.com LLC and forumsforjustice.org. Let me check in the chat room. Is there anything that we've missed tonight, my darling, wonderful true crime angels? It looks like we are all set and ready to go for next week. Next week, I am working on a show about, and I can't say for sure this is going to happen, but I hope it does, about Jahi McMath, the young woman who died, or not young woman, the child who died. She's dead. And the family is trying to keep her body alive in an undisclosed location. I found out some information. I'm hoping to have an update for you next week, and if it can all come together, which I'm hoping it will, you'll find it very, very interesting. I can promise you that. Angela Reese is still quite sick. She is still going to come on my Thursday show on iHeartRadio soon when she can actually talk and talk about the Elizabeth Smart case and how her husband was wrongly accused of kidnapping Elizabeth and how he was put in prison and eventually was killed, basically, due to stress because his brain exploded. He had an aneurysm that exploded and killed him because of all the pressure they put on him to admit he took Elizabeth Smart, and Richard Reese did not do any such thing. Angela will be on to talk about that. You'll be shocked at what she has to tell you about what went on in that investigation. Okay, I think that's everything. I think I have actually talked myself out. It's time now for quesadillas and more true crime stuff. We'll see you on websleuths.com or forumsforjustice.org. This is Tricia Griffiths, True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.